and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. Joining us from his home away from home, Vancouver, British Columbia, is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how have you been?
I'm well, Rob, and you?
Good, good. It's a great time of year here in Toronto. Mickey, we have temperatures in the mid-20s, a little bit humid, but not a cloud in the sky, so it's a welcome relief from the kind of dismal spring and winter that we went through. What's it like in Vancouver today?
It's a little bit gray and as per usual, but the weather's been quite nice here all overall, I would say. Partly sunny, and it's been pretty warm here, too.
Okay, well, do yourself a favor, I guess, when you're out there. Are you going to go fishing?
I'm on my way to fish on Monday, so I'm going to go try to catch a couple of big salmon off the coast of Vancouver Island.
Okay, we'll be watching for some tall tales then next time out, Mickey. We are continuing our special series on carbon. Coal is in the spotlight for this edition of the program, a combustible sedimentary rock that's played a very prominent role throughout history as an energy resource. But let's go to the very beginnings, Mickey. Tell us how coal was formed and how it's formed.
Yes, well, coal is basically the remnants of organic matter, mainly trees and swamps. And for a significant part of geologic history, the earth has been covered by warm, shallow seas that grow a lot of plant material and trees, and that decays. And first you have peat. Mm-hmm. And then as it has to do with depth of burial and temperature and pressure. So essentially coal is somewhat of a metamorphic rock, although it's sedimentary in nature. But there's a classification of coal that goes all the way from peat to lignite to subbituminous to bituminous coal to anthracite, and then the ultimate product would be graphite. But it's a process where through heat and pressure, temperature and pressure, the volatiles, and that would include mainly hydrogen and oxygen in the form of water, and sulfur and nitrogen, are driven off, and so the coal becomes a higher rank as we go up there. And so you eliminate all the volatiles, and with lignite it can be around up to 65%, and by the time you get to anthracite you're down to 7 to 12%.
Okay, well, I was on the World Coal Association website. They summed it up nicely. This is how they define coal: the altered remains of prehistoric vegetation. And that really sums it up, doesn't it?
Well, it really does. And we have coal reserves scattered throughout geologic history. There's even coal in some beds in the Precambrian, which is probably from algae, actually, because there were no land plants during that mm-hmm. period of time. But we have coal reserves mainly in what's called the Carboniferous period, carbon coal, Carboniferous, and that's generally a European term. In the North America, we call those the Mississippian and Pennsylvanian periods. We just have immense reserves and mm-hmm. resources of coal throughout the world.
Yeah, how far back can we go, Mickey, to trace the earliest uses of coal?
Well, since antiquity, and certainly used in Britain during the Bronze Age, in China about 1000 BC was used to smelt copper. The Romans developed all the current major coal fields in Britain, or the ones that have been exploited, were all known by the Romans. Certainly by 200 AD, there was a significant coal industry in Britain for heating, mm-hmm. for drying grain, for smelting of iron ores. But about 1000 AD, it's really started to increase in importance. By the 13th century, there were two two loading docks in London called Seacoal Lane and Newcastle Lane. And Seacoal was coal that had been basically eroded out of cliffs and outcrops along the sea, and it was gathered up, delivered to this place called Seacoal Lane. And then the coal fields in up in Newcastle in extreme northeastern England were being mined by that time. By about the 13th century, demand outstripped what could be easily gathered up, and so pit mining and underground mining started. But it really kicked off in the 1700s with the Industrial Revolution, and the steam engine replaced the water wheel, and steam engines were powered by coal. By the mid-1700s, 80% of the world's coal is comes from Britain. And so coal really is a British story. By 1947, there were three-quarters of a million miners in the coal industry in Britain. That's shrunk considerably now.
Yeah. Can you think of a more dangerous commodity to mine underground than coal?
No, there is none. No. It is by far the most dangerous mines in the world, and that basically has to do with the fact that you're mining a combustible product that generates a lot of methane. So underground coal fires, methane explosions kill a lot of people throughout the world every year, especially in China, actually, where there's very little regulation, and coal is used extensively, and a lot of times it's illegal mining or mom-and-pop mining with no safety standards.
Okay, we should perhaps, before we get into talking a little bit further in depth, Mickey, concerning the demand and production of coal today, we should talk maybe a little bit about the different types of coal out there. For example, thermal coal, mainly used for power generation. We have metallurgical coal, and I believe those two combined account for about half of all coal produced. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not sure. I think there's probably more than half of that. But you know, we talked a little bit about the rank of coal and peat. Peat is used as a fuel still in Ireland and Finland, uses soil conditioner. Then we go to lignite, and lignite is used to generate electrical power. It's very impure coal. It's generally brown, but where there are no nearby fuel sources. For example, a place I've been in Kosovo burns lignite. It burns very dirty. Then as we go up into grade, we have the sub-bituminous coal, which is, again, used mainly for electrical power. Mm-hmm. It's also the source of aromatic hydrocarbons in the chemical industry. And that would be what is generally referred to as thermal coal, which is used to produce electrical power or space heating. Bituminous coal is generally good coal. Good rank will use generally for electrical power and a lot for heating for industrial applications. And this is what coke is made from. So if it's made into coke, it would be referred to as metallurgical coal, used in the steelmaking industry. And then finally, you get to anthracite, and that's the highest grade, and that's where it gets really glossy black, what most people would think coal looks like, and that's used mainly for space heating in residential and commercial applications worldwide. But coal, the world is really powered basically by coal.
Of course, all the headlines today, Mickey, concerning coal are around efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. With that in mind, are we seeing the production and use of coal decline, or is it in fact rising?
Well, it's increasing year over year. 40% of the world's electricity is produced by coal. That is growing. 44% of the CO2 emissions in the world are due to coal. That is, at best, breaking even, if not increasing. But what's really happened is as China and India become more and more industrialized, their main sources of electricity are coal. China consumes over 50% of the world's coal now, and it's increasing, growing something on the order of 10% per year. So there has been lots of talk and lots of movement to reduce emissions of CO2 from coal-burning power plants, and there are environmental initiatives to do that. But, Rob, right now there are 1,200 new coal-fired power plants proposed in the world, and two-thirds of those are in China and India, and that's just not going to stop. So no matter what we would try to do in the United States, and certainly we have been weaning ourselves off coal somewhat in terms of for electricity, and we're basically replacing that with natural gas, which has to do with a natural gas boom due to hydrofracking and lower prices. But we're fighting a losing battle on this. It makes no sense in the world. And in addition, we have organizations like the United Nations who are on this CO2 global warming agenda, but by the same time they are subsidizing 20 new coal-fired power plants in China and India, basically by doing carbon credits with companies in Great Britain. So the net result of that is no less CO2 put in the atmosphere from burning coal. So it's a bit disingenuous to me, this whole thing about trying to cut down on CO2 emissions in the world's developed countries, while at the same time supporting increased burning of coal other parts of the world.
But that, in fact, is what is going on right now in the United States with President Obama's proposal right now to cut greenhouse gas emissions. How much of a threat does that represent to the U.S. coal industry?
Well, certainly it does represent a threat. I think he's trying to shut down something on the order of 100 power plants in the U.S. over the next few years, a lot of those are somewhat obsolete plants, and they probably are. Some of those need to be shuttered, but the fact remains that we have a demand for electricity in the United States, and what are you going to replace it with? Mm-hmm. Well, natural gas is methane, and methane is the ultimate greenhouse gas, 23 times more deleterious as a greenhouse gas than CO2 is. So replacing coal-fired plants with natural gas plants does not make a lot of sense environmentally. Seems to be lost here that the ultimate clean energy is uranium and nuclear fuel, and it looks to me like the Obama agenda has lost its way with some pseudoscience here.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up with a comment from you on an investing angle here. You know, there are a lot of big publicly traded companies in this sector, in this industry, that you could put money into. A lot of the stocks of these companies have been crushed, taking a big haircut of late. How does this sector of the market look to you right now from an investing point of view? Should people be, is there an attraction there because these stocks have been beaten up so badly?
Well, certainly when stocks get beaten up badly, it would get the notice of contrarians like myself. Part of the problem with the coal industry is the geopolitics that goes on with global warming right now. I personally do not play the big coal companies because of some perceived risks in that regard. In the junior sector, there have been attempts, mostly failures over the last few years, to make coal plays. There was a coal play in Indonesia that essentially has failed. During the global economic crisis, there was a coal discovery in far eastern central Saskatchewan, in an area that was not known to host coal before, and the company had gold in its name, and it was searching for diamonds with geophysical anomalies, and they ran into some coal beds, and that created quite a buzz in the junior industry for a while, but that pretty much flopped and went by its way. There was a company mining coking coal, metallurgical coal in Alabama. That failed and has been reorganized and management kicked out. So there have been attempts in the junior industry, not very successful. You know, just nothing sexy about coal, number one. So it does not always seem to strike a fancy with investors.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up on that note, Mickey. We will be back in a couple of weeks, of course. What do you want to focus on next time out?
I think we'll move right in. We touched on it a bit today, and that would be natural gas, product of energy, hydrocarbons. And so we will get into natural gas, which is essentially methane and some higher, more complicated hydrocarbons, and talk about what it's used for and what its future is.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks very much, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.